Welcome back, everyone. I'm Kimmy Jackson, and this is the Make Your Move podcast, where we talk about theories, philosophies, and ideas that simplify the concept of emotional intelligence. Before I get too excited and carried away talking about installing updates and boosting efficiency, which will lead us right into the five hindrances of emotional intelligence, I want to throw in this quick episode 5A. So this was not a planned episode, but I thought if I called it 5A, then I wouldn't get in too much trouble for misleading anyone, because it's been a little bit of time since I've recorded an episode, and we do have our five hindrances to emotional intelligence coming right up, starting with episode 6. And I am so excited for all of us to get to the heart and lifeline of emotional intelligence together. So excited, in fact, I find myself leaking spoilers all the time. That's probably because I'm spending more time talking about it than recording episodes for it. But I could be at swim practice, or I was even at my brother's wedding reception, leaking spoilers about emotional intelligence. Trust me when I know how uncool I sound when I say that. But today, we have a quick and brief application inspired by episode 5. Remember, that was all about you don't know the power of the dark side. After a few conversations and hearing feedback from episode 5, I heard an interest and then started to see value in sharing more about the death of the ego. And this was a concept that was introduced to me by Dr. David Burns. He's a leading expert in cognitive behavioral therapy, also known as CBT. And last episode, we shared other research from Dr. Burns about the negative motives we naturally possess. Remember, some of those were competition, narcissism, pride, blame, etc. And then we discussed how these motives, although natural, interfere with our relationships, and that we all have the power and abilities to rise above these motives. Now, his theory, Dr. Burns' theory, which is called motivational theory, and his expertise is shared more on episode 5. So if you'd like to learn more about him, then I'll have you backtrack a bit. But we're going to keep moving forward here, because I started to think that perhaps it would be helpful to hear some application, a real-life example of what the death of the ego entails. Trust me when I say that is just as cool as it sounds. Oh, I wish there was a way that we could take a poll while recording, because I would be interested to see people's initial thoughts and how many see benefit in the death of their ego and how many see benefit in maintaining their ego and its thriving and surviving. Be fascinating just to pull the difference there, but I want to share an example here, and before I do that, I want to quickly remind you of those core principles that Dr. Burns gave us. Remember, we go more in depth in those in episode 5, but you may recall when facing conflict, he gave us 3 core principles. The first was, we forcefully create the relationship problems that we complain about so bitterly. You might also hear that you are often guilty of the very thing you're complaining about. Okay, so that's number 1. Number 2, we insist on being victims and we don't want to examine our own role in the conflict. And last episode, we even talked about how we enjoy being the victim. It's so nice to scapegoat or to blame others and to not have that responsibility on us. So number 2 is we insist on being victims and don't want to examine our own role in the conflict. Then number 3, we have more power than we think we do. That one's my favorite. So there's a common denominator here. How we are creating the very problem we're complaining about, but we fail to see or accept our personal responsibility, and why we insist or even enjoy being victims. And that is our ego. So typically in psychology, when we hear the term ego, that's when we tip our hats off to Sir Sigmund Freud, but not today. This concept of ego and the denial or death of the ego, we attribute to Buddhist beliefs and practices, long before Freud and his time. So I started to do a little research beyond what Dr. Burns had taught me, and I learned a few concepts of Buddhism that I want to share briefly, and that will set a nice stage for us when introducing and going more in depth with the death of the ego. After we take a look at a few of these principles, I want to share a real life example of the death of the ego and how and why it can be so powerful to experience this personal transformation. I'm not going to claim myself as any kind of expert, so when I'm discussing these Buddhist concepts, I realize that these are very surface level definitions. One doctrine or belief held in the Buddhist realm is called anatta, which means non-self or substanceless, and further states there is no permanence within human existence. We are constantly changing, and we develop beyond ego. An ego is seen as a lower state of being. Then we develop to a higher state of greater self and achieve one principle specifically called mudita, which means joy. So I'm curious, what happens when you hear the word joy? What comes to mind when you instantly hear that phrase? What feelings begin to resonate? And I'm wondering if even an image comes to mind, because joy can be such a potent word for people. Maybe when you start to think about it, you picture a relaxing Sunday or weekend. Or do you think of a tropical vacation or crashing ocean waves? Ah, kids smiling, maybe Christmas morning. Generally, joy is equated with peace or happiness. And I want to encourage the need to go deeper with joy, because joy is deeper and it's a much more fulfilling state of being than just peace and happiness. In Buddhism, joy or mudita means sympathetic or vicarious joy. This is where it starts to get really fascinating. Do you hear the emphasis on relationships? Ah, sympathetic or vicarious. You need people to achieve true joy. I could start talking about attachment theory here, but I'm sure you're already filling in that blank, and you guys know that that's really my passion and my foundation of where I put theory all the time. That need to connect and to attach, and then in order to have this highest level of being or joy, it requires relationships. So furthermore, what mudita would suggest is that pleasure comes from delighting in other people's well-being. Mudita is a pure joy unaltered by self-interest. I was reading through some essays online that went deeper into the concepts and teachings of mudita, and on one particular website that was called Access to Insight, they shared different essays about Buddhism, and this essay was entitled Mudita, the Buddha's Teaching on Unselfish Joy. And the authors here were Thera Jackson, Knight, and Oates. This was written back in 2005. And as an introduction to this essay, they shared this poem. And it says, "The Awakened One, the Buddha said, 'Here, monks, a disciple lets his mind pervade one quarter of the world with thoughts of unselfish joy. And so the second, and so the third, and so the fourth. And thus the whole wide world, above, below, around, everywhere, and equally, he continues to pervade with a heart of unselfish joy, abundant, grown great, measureless, without hostility or ill will." End of quote. The virtue of joy, of greater self, is pleasure in the happiness of others. This could quite possibly be a very different way of thinking for so many of us who work so hard and have been indoctrinated with don't rely on anyone, or don't trust other people, or especially don't let people take advantage of you. And here, what we're learning is that true, lasting joy is a higher level of being that comes from a lack of self-interest and an invigoration all coming from the happiness of other people. All right, well, let's keep going. So these principles provide the solemn intention of what Dr. Burns refers to as the death of the ego. True happiness, joy, is not experienced from one's personal success or accomplishments, or by putting other people in their place, or having that final word. When you experience and accept the death of the ego, you experience the connection and freedom of saving, preserving, or protecting such an empty concept like ego. I was listening to a Facebook Live with Dr. Burns, and he had a question posed to him regarding two principles that he teaches to his clients, his students, and the practitioners that he trains. One principle being the death of the ego, and the second one called unconditional self-esteem. And the question was how unconditional self-esteem could possibly contradict the death of the ego. So to answer the question, Dr. Burns shared, unconditional self-esteem, now this is me paraphrasing a bit here, he said, unconditional self-esteem, this is when you love yourself because you are a human being and you need love, not because you've earned it. You love yourself just as much as when you fail as when you succeed. That's when you have achieved unconditional self-esteem. He then said, but then once you develop unconditional self-esteem, you get rid of it as fast as you can. Yes, podcasters, you heard that correctly. He then shared, I don't want self-esteem. Life is so much richer than an empty concept of having to have self-esteem. Life is made up of experiences, not self-esteem. End of quote. Now, remember, this is coming from a psychiatrist trained as a therapist, and to hear him say that he doesn't want a self-esteem and that that's an empty concept, that was enlightening to me. Perhaps confusing, but let me show you why. And I want to do that by providing this real-life example of what the death of the ego looks, sounds, and feels like. And I want to start by first expressing my sincere gratitude to our lovely volunteer. This is a very sweet and very courageous friend of mine that I've known for a number of years, and we live pretty far apart from each other now, but this friend and I had a few conversations following episode 5, and she shared with me a variety of negative motives that she connected with. And, you know, she might actually have a dark side that sounds familiar to a lot of you listening. She listed off feeling connected to anger. Yep, I do that, she said. Justice. Yeah, that one's really important to me. Self-pity. I do that. Yeah, I do a lot of those, she said. So she and I then made the connection that the individual she had chosen for, you remember the thought experiment from episode 5, where you choose an individual that you're having conflict with, and she chose her brother-in-law. And remember in the experiment that after you push the magic button, you and this individual would be best friends. And she quickly recognized that these motives were apparent in her very disconnected and distant relationship with this brother-in-law. And she could quickly catch on and see how she, one, had been contributing to the problem that she had been complaining about, two, had insisted on being the victim, and to this point she shared, it's a lot easier, this is a quote from her, it's a lot easier seeing everything he has done that's wrong and make it all his problem, but that's just me being a victim. End of quote. And then number 3, she really liked the sound of having more power than she thought she had. At this point in our conversation, there was a very clear emotional and mental teeter-totter going on. She strongly validated her position as the victim. She told me, quote, I like it here. It's his fault that I'm here. End of quote. However, she also realized the significance of letting go of the blame and trying to move forward. So if we zoom out here for just a second, I have to point out that at this very point with talking with my friend, there was already a great movement and momentum going on. It's a tremendous stride, difficult, maybe or maybe not, but it's a tremendous stride to acknowledge our desire to be a victim and to recognize and accept that responsibility in how we have contributed, even created the very problem we are complaining about. That's not always an easy step for individuals to make. So then she asked me, "All right, Kimmy, what now?" And this is when the music changes, the camera zooms in, and cue the death of the ego. So Dr. Burns explains, the death of the ego is both a Buddhist and Christian concept of death and being reborn. And I shared this with my friend as we began her process of her own death of the ego. And I told her that Dr. Burns said, this is his quote, "You die to feel alive," end of quote. And that is the process of the death of the ego. You die to feel alive. Dr. Burns also says, quote, "The death of the ego is painful. No one wants to die," end of quote. So with that happy tune, we, my friend and I, began. When it comes to a relationship, the death of the ego requires letting go of blame and acknowledging the other person's truth. That might have induced a headache for a lot of us that are listening right now. Letting go of blame and acknowledging the other person's truth. Does that pinch? So stick with me here and let's see if we can help that headache a bit. To begin, my friend and I created a long list of specific feelings that she and her brother-in-law had experienced as a result of their pervasive conflict. Pervasive, she defined as years throughout multiple holidays, even family tragedies. This has been prolonged through apologies and acts of kindness rendered by my friend. A pervasive conflict. So we use an emotions word list that Dr. Burns provides, and after reflecting on her feelings and helping me understand where her hurt had come from, we shifted gears and then had her list her brother-in-law's feelings. And she included hurt, misunderstood, unhappy, nervous, worthless, ashamed, embarrassed, humiliated, self-conscious, rejected, incompetent, frustrated, angry, mad, resentful, annoyed, and furious. We sat for a brief moment, and I initially inquired if my friend recognized the similar feelings between she and her brother-in-law. And she responded with, "Yeah, that's weird." And after she expressed more about her feelings and where they came from, I asked, "How do you feel when you hear the feelings he might have experienced?" And without any hesitation, her response was, "Good. You deserve to feel those feelings, and I feel justified." And this, you guys, this is why I chose this friend as an example. I love that she wouldn't feel any kind of pressure to say what I wanted to hear. You know, "Oh, I feel bad he felt that way." No. She felt good about it and even justified. And how often does that happen to the rest of us? That's that ego and a combination of that wanting to be the victim mixed up together for this elixir of heaviness that is sitting on us. Okay? So what was interesting though, in that very same breath, after saying, "Good, you deserve to feel those feelings, I feel justified," she then said, "However," okay? And I know that I also feel bad. And that's hard. Stop. This is where pace and tone changes for people. She then continued to say, quote, I wouldn't want anyone to feel worthless. Even him. She continued, I know that everyone has value and worth, and that no one is perfect. And when you are mad at someone, it's easy to forget that they have feelings too. I just focus on being the victim and the wrongs they did to me and how much I hurt. End of quote. She then looked up at me and said, oh, I don't like this. And I asked her, what do you mean? And she said, I don't like how I feel. I have been angry for so long, and I don't like letting go of that and feeling bad for him. It actually makes me feel sick a little. And this is exactly when someone is experiencing the death of the ego. It can be painful, to the point where my friend even said that she was starting to feel nauseous. She continued to share, it feels safe to be mad, to be the victim. But I know that isn't helping me at all, or my husband, because that's his brother. I know I need to forgive him, but I want him to apologize. And before I could even jump in, you guys, she gave me a better response than I could have even dreamt of. She started to share with me a family lesson on forgiveness that she and her hubby had taught their kids that week in a game using balloons. They have a family with young kids, and with sharing toys, tempers can fly. And that sounds kind of familiar, something that we experience in our house pretty often. So she talked about how one of the older brothers gets mad when a younger brother breaks his Lego creations. Yep, I totally get that. He will get mad, and it takes him a long time before he can really let go of his anger, is what she was telling me. So as a physical representation, they blew up a balloon, and without tying it off, they handed the balloon to their son and said, this represents your anger, your frustration. And until you decide to let it go, it just kind of hangs around, clouding your vision, getting in the way of playing and everything else until you decide to let it go. So they even had him, along with their other kids, try and play while holding their balloon. And they all understood the difficulty and distraction the balloon or anger created. She taught them and then shared with me, you don't need anything at all from the other person. It's completely up to you. And then for fun, when Big Brother was ready to let go of his balloon, they all sang Let It Go to rejoice in his accomplishment. You would not hear us sing Let It Go at our house. We have all boys, except for Mommy. But we do like Olaf from Frozen. That's about it. But I love this example and the visual that it provides. It's so powerful for any age, and how distracting that anger, that blame, that ego, or that victim can be for any of us. Dr. Burns shares, when we let go of blame and see how you are creating the problem, it can be shocking, even humiliating. He further encouraged, when you experience the death of the ego, it can be extremely liberating. How much lighter or fun or present can someone be without a bunch of balloons in their face? I don't know about each of you listening, but wouldn't it be nice? No, sorry, deeper. Wouldn't it be refreshing to feel lighter, to see more clearly, to have better access to the power, intelligence, and creativity you possess? Absolutely. Get those ego balloons out of the way. Yes, someone hurt you, and you have hurt someone's too. But guess what? Your ego is not you. It's a defense, it's a wall, It's a shell that holds your essence, your spirit, your intuition, your intelligence, and the death of the ego does not change you. What it does is make you more energetic, empathetic, and available for you and the people you interact with. Now, forgiveness is often a step included in the death of the ego transformation, and where so many of us experience that pain. Collectively, we have this unhelpful belief that forgiveness takes time. You are justified in your anger and being a victim. Yep, go ahead, hold on to those balloons, because that helps when you're driving or listening to your daughter about her hard week at school or helping your son with his homework or writing a brief for work. No, that doesn't help at all. What I want to encourage is that we be swift to forgive, my friends. Because you know what? It's not the last time someone is going to mess up, screw up, or hurt your feelings. We must develop and maintain that capacity to forgive. He who is devoid of the power to forgive is devoid of the power to love. There is some good in the worst of us and some evil in the best of us. When we discover this, we are less prone to hate our enemies. That comes from Martin Luther King Jr. Also from Martin Luther King Jr. is the quote, "Forgiveness is not an occasional act. It is a permanent attitude." Now, back to my friend. She has also shared some inspiring thoughts with me as she experienced the death of the ego. She is not best friends with her brother-in-law today, but she has shared that she looks at him and their relationship differently. She feels lighter, and there is less tension between she and her husband on this previously very sore subject. And the death of the ego has led her to be more empathetic to her husband, to her children. I had to commend her because she didn't pick a simple frustration that occurred between she and someone close to her. She chose to focus on a very entangled and difficult relationship. And I want to thank her again. Thank you so, so much for sharing her inspiring example with all of us. And I know she will continue to move forward. Those are the pieces that I wanted to share with you all today. Thank you so much for listening and sharing the Make Your Move podcast. Before I take off here, I want to share a few resources from Dr. Burns, one being his website, which is called feelinggood.com. And from his website, you can access Dr. Burns' blog and podcast. And the reason why I want to share that is because he continues to provide incredible examples of the death of the ego, even personal challenges and triumphs with his own death of the ego, along with other helpful and easy to apply mental health teachings and concepts. It's fantastic. So that's everything that I have for us today, you guys, and be ready to jump into those 5 hindrances to emotional intelligence. Until next time, I'll see you later. Bye.